Episode 283 of the Pilot the Pilot podcast takes off now.
Fly with Garmin Avionics, then grab your mobile device and make the Garmin Pilot app your cockpit companion. Get advanced functions you'll use before, during, and after every flight, including updating your aircraft's databases and logging engine data. Plan, file, fly, log with Garmin Pilot.
The Pilot to Pilot podcast is brought to you by Learn the Finer Points. Use the link below to save 10% off their ground school app.
My name is Brian with a Y. Turner. My middle name is with a Y. Turner. I run a YouTube channel and Instagram called Just Plain Silly. I'm an instrument rated private pilot.
Aviation, what is going on? And welcome back to the Pilot to Pilot podcast. My name is Justin Seams and I am your host. Today's episode is an Oshkosh recording. We're talking with Brian with a Y, Turner. He is Instagram, Just Plain Silly, and also on YouTube. It was awesome to talk to him. It's been a long time coming as well. I feel like all these, I start off with saying it's a long time coming. But we have Brian on. He is hilarious, just as funny as you imagine in person as he is on Instagram. It was also really cool to have his wife in there to throw in some wife insight as well, because no one can do this without a support system, and that is very, very much true. So I'm very excited to have him on. It's going to be a great episode. I hope you really enjoy it. We have a really just deep talk and talk a little more about flying and talk a little bit about everything. So it's a good one. Hope you enjoy it. Without any further ado, here's Brian with a Y, Just Plain Silly. Brian, what's going on, man? Welcome to the Pilot to Pilot podcast.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is the most official setup I've ever been in my life.
This is the most official setup I've ever been in as well.
I feel way too much pressure and I don't know if I can do this.
I feel like we're both faking it at this point, and all we're doing is sitting in a chair talking.
Yeah, all right. Absolutely. It just feels very legit. We are sitting in the EA radio. I don't even know if Kevin wants me to say that, but we're in the booth right now recording. So it's cool. I like it. I can get used to this. Maybe I need this back home. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you definitely need it. Yeah, hello,
Editor Kevin. Editor Kevin, what's going on? We don't let him talk usually, so this is new for him. People are like, oh, he's got a voice.
No, I do have a voice. We're all here. I did an episode last year.
Yeah, you were. Yeah. You're right, you were. But yeah, I'm pumped to have you on. We actually have a mutual friend, Joe. Fly with Captain Joe.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's one of my good friends.
Nicest guy I've ever met in my life.
I was with him in Germany a couple months ago. He was like, get Brian on, Brian with a Y, not Brian with an I. We don't like Brian with
a
Y.
No.
Yeah. But he said, get Brian on the podcast. He's like, all right, done. I'll do it. And here we are.
Oh,
well, I reached out to you yesterday and it worked out.
I know. I'm glad he said that. I could go on for hours about how great of a guy he is.
Yeah. I'm he's sure awesome.
Both good.
Yep. Love Joe. He's a great dude. His only flaw is he's a Dortmund fan and not a Bayern fan. If you're not into soccer, I get it.
But I don't know what that means, but I'm nodding like I do. Yeah.
Just say Bayern's the best. That's okay, all that matters.
Bayern with a Y.
Yeah. Bayern. Exactly. Well, cool. We're not here to talk about Joe, no matter how great Joe is and how much he likes us talking about him. But we are here to talk about your aviation story and how you became a pilot and kind of just go on from there. So first thing I always ask everyone is, why'd you want to be a pilot?
I've been crazy about airplanes since I was first memories, first toys. Everything was always planes, kites, anything that would go up in the air. I've always just been enamored by them. When I was a kid, I lived in Oklahoma and my grandparents lived in New Orleans. And so a few times a year we'd get on Southwest Airlines. I always had to have the window seat. And I glued to the window, which actually hasn't changed in 40 some odd years, and just watch the wing do its thing, watch the old school, thrust reversers, just all that mechanical stuff fascinated. Anything about flight just always, always interested me. And then sometime about the mid 80s, my dad had a pilot's license, but he hadn't flown a lot. And then kind of around the mid 80s, he started flying again. He and a buddy went in on a plane and he would take me up. And it was just like the most magical thing ever. It's kind of strange. I never really had the thought of like, I want to be a pilot when I grow up. I got real into RC planes and all kinds of things like that. But it's always been a theme in my life is aviation. And there were a few times when I was probably pre-college age where I'd gone down to a flight school. I remember going to, it was in Addison, Texas. There's a place called Monarch. And I was like, I just walked in. I go, how much does it cost to learn to fly? And they said about $15,000. And I was like, well, I don't have that. I guess I can't be a pilot. And then I went to another flight school. We were living in Tulsa, Oklahoma for a while. And I went up there and I was like, how much does it cost to learn to fly a plane? And they're like, oh, it's the same thing, $10,000, $15,000. So I still didn't have it. And then one day I was like, there's got to be a cheaper way to learn to fly. And so I got on Craigslist and typed in flight instructor. And I found this guy and he said, I can teach you to fly for like $100 an hour. And it didn't even occur to me that I could pay this out. So I called him up and I go, can I legitimately just come out there and pay for an hour of flight? Because that's how people do it. I was like, I thought I had to write someone a check for $15,000. Yeah. The flight school didn't clarify. And I guess I wasn't patient enough to stick around and ask for details. And so he was a very new flight instructor. I think I might have been one of his first or second, third maybe student. And but he was the cheap instructor I found on Craigslist. And he was probably, he's in Gainesville. I'm in Louisville. So let's call it an hour drive. So I'd drive up there a couple times a week and hit a 172 and go out there and fly. And I remember I was 36. So I started this late. And I remember going out there for the first flight and being terrified. I hadn't had a lot of time in small planes other than when I was a kid. And I was like, you know, I know they're bumpy. I know it's not the same as being on, you know, and I'm like, if I don't want to get in this plane and be scared and realize, oh, I'm not doing this. And now it's almost like before I became a pilot, it was more exciting because this would just be awesome. But I was so scared I was going to take that flight and be like, I can't do this. And then that's just not going to be a part of my life. But,
right.
You know, he was, what I now know is typical at the time. I thought he let me take the plane off. And I you know, pulled back and the plane went up and I was like, I mean, every moment of that flight just built more and more adrenaline, better, better, better. Went out and, you know, basic maneuvers and stuff. And it was, you know, my first time really as an adult, like knowing what I was doing, flying a plane. And yeah. I was just like, oh, I am going to be poor. Like this is too good. And so, I remember I was paying, you know, $100 or whatever it was a couple times a week. And he set me down and told me something that everyone knows now. And he goes, we're kind of relearning some same stuff over and over. You're not flying frequent enough. And so I said, okay, well, I'm going to take a little bit of break and I'm going to save up enough money to pay for 6 or 7 flights so I can be doing 2 or 3 a week and kind of get past this sort of initial just kind of maneuvering. And, you know, saved up a little bit of money, went out there. And then he started saying, okay, now we need to start talking about cross countries and foggles and all these kind of things. And it was just like, it just built and built and built. And I'm coming up on 10 years as a certified pilot. And I can think of maybe one flight that I wasn't happy. Like, yeah. It's still, I go up now and I'm just like, I can't believe I get to do this. I still, every time we go on vacation, dad gets the window seat. Like, it just, I've never had one moment where I've been like, it's losing its fun. Like every flight is amazing. It's just, it's cliche to say it's in your blood, but I mean, that's how it feels.
So what was the reason why you didn't try to do it before 36? Like, was there anything holding you back or you just didn't even take, like, I guess the better question is why didn't you do it? Why didn't you do it earlier?
So a couple things. One, this is sound weird. I was scared of flying.
Okay.
I loved planes, but I was scared of flying. Like I always, you know, if someone said they were going to go be a pilot, my first thought was, well, they'll eventually die in a plane crash. That was just like, where that came from, I don't know.
Yeah.
But even when my dad was flying as a kid, I'd ask him, like, what keeps the wings off? What happens if, you know, it was always that, because when you hear about planes, it's because it's not because something awesome has happened. So in my head, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
And even early on, and maybe you experienced this too, early on the first couple of years when I'm flying, if you went a week or two without flying, you get up, you know, out of the run-up area and you're like, okay, you know, it's been, you know, you have that moment of hesitation and I don't have those anymore, but there was a lot of fear early on. Like I said, I was scared that I would go take that first flight and find out that I'm scared of the bumps or something, this isn't for me. So kind of a strange fear of flying. I always, you know, when we first got married, there was a point when, oh, sorry, my wife's here. Me and your editor.
Yeah. Kevin, you have something to explain? What do you want?
I don't know.
My wife Erin is sitting here observing. And
making sure you don't say anything stupid.
She had gone on a couple flights with me and a couple flights with my mom and sister, some various trips. And at one point she goes, I don't like flying with you guys because you're gripping the seat. I used to be like just this when I would fly. I mean, I love flying, but I was also at the same time terrified. But then you become a pilot and now it's like, now I have probably the I gotta make sure I don't get complacent because it's so not scary to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's like nothing's, you know, super bad. And I gotta kind of make sure that I don't get complacent or whatever, but that fear was a big part of it. And then the money was a big part of it.
Yeah.
So, but those two things now you get a little bit older and you get a little more experience and it's not as big of an issue.
Was it a control thing? Like you being in control, did that make it better?
I it's funny you say that because even after getting my pilot's license and I'm having this epiphany now, I liked flying my own plane just fine. But up until maybe 5 years ago, I still wasn't completely comfortable in commercial flights. And that's probably a control thing.
Yeah.
Cause it's not that I don't know who's up there. It's that I can't, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Like this, what's going to happen is going to happen. And I don't have a say in it. At the time, probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think
I'm a private pilot. Well, I got this.
I think control is a huge part of it. I'm afraid of heights. And I talk to a lot of pilots. A lot of pilots are afraid of heights. Yeah. And it's like, I don't like bridges. I don't like getting on my roof. I don't like tall buildings. And it's like, there's nothing I can do in a plane. I've got, you know, actions I can take to get the thing on the ground. Right. So, I don't know that I would say I'm terrified of heights. We went,
We got a laugh from the wife.
Yeah. She put me on that glass balcony in Chicago at the Willis Tower. And I was like, I will stand on that thing just long enough for the camera shutter to open and close, and I'm getting off of it. I will not. And you know, there's kids jumping up and down and bouncing on it. We went to the Royal Gorge Bridge a couple years ago in Colorado. And I remember I said, nobody talk to me. Nobody look at me. I'm walking across this. And, you know, my kids are laughing at me because they're like, look, Dad, you can see through the cracks in the bridge or whatever. And I'm like, I'm absolutely petrified. They still make fun of me about it.
You can confirm if you want. Is this all true?
It's very true.
Do you still make fun of them for it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So I hate roller coasters. I hate roller coasters.
Okay.
And my kid's 19 months, so got a little time to either pretend I like roller coasters or figure out how to like roller coasters for my wife and kid, make fun of me and hold it over my head for the next 15 years. So I'll be in a similar shoes.
It's better just to own the embarrassment. Yeah. Like, I love it. There's a photo of me like leaving the family behind and just darting across the bridge because I'm like, and I can't look out.
Like, I have a similar story when I was like in sixth grade. I ran across, we were going, what's the mountain, in Disney, it's a big water ride, the mountain.
Splash Mountain.
There we go. See, look, great value. Splash Mountain. We waited 3 hours to go in line for this ride, and we get up there, and I just run away. Literally run through the canoe, whatever it's called, and I run away. And I'm loose in Disney all by myself. I'm like in sixth grade. Yeah, so not happening. So I think I'll embrace it.
So you still don't like roller coasters?
Don't like them. Okay. Never. Don't like them. Nope, not going to happen. But yeah. Good little side story there.
Sure.
All right, so looking back now, do you think there's a lot of people in a similar situation, right? Either they're afraid to fly, don't have the money to fly, or there's just something terrifies them about it. What would you say to someone in that situation right now that wants to fly? They're in their 20s. How would you keep them from waiting another 15 years before they started? What would you recommend?
I don't know, because if I were on the receiving end of advice, I wouldn't have listened.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can tell you moments that stand out to me. I was scared to death to stall airplanes. I've always been scared the plane's going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. I had a handful of different instructors, and I went out with an instructor who was a great instructor, very aggressive. He knew what the plane could and couldn't do, and he took me up and yanked and banked that thing. I mean, basically to show me that I was going to give up before the plane was. Like, there, we were in the summer doing stalls. A lot of on the edge of, you know, flying the envelope of that plane. And I remember walking away going, okay, the plane can handle whatever gets thrown at it. So we're going to quit worrying about it coming apart in the sky. And that, you know, early on flying in Texas in the summer, those thermals, they beat the crap out of you. And you're like, how is this thing built? Like, how do I know it's structurally going to hold together? And I'm not one to go learn the answer to that question, but having him actually put me in it and show me that the plane can handle it was very eye-opening for me. So if you're worried about the plane breaking, people who talk to me about stuff like that, I go show them the videos where they're testing the wings, the stress test on the 757.
Touch check.
Yeah, like they go vertical before it snaps. And it's like, you know, I remember being younger and seeing that thing just flap like a couple of feet and being like, oh gosh, this is bad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's designed to handle it. So that the structure part was one of it. I don't think, you know, now my fears are pretty rational. I'm scared of an in-flight fire.
Okay.
Because
carbon monoxide.
Carbon monoxide. I got the carbon monoxide thing in the plane. But bird strike. You know, there's things like that. We have these giant turkey vultures that fly, and they love the heat coming off runways, and so those things scare the heck out of me. But those are things that are pretty rational, because if I hit one of those things, if it comes to the windshield, I'm potentially in trouble. If it hits a control surface, like it can be real. But also, the odds of it happening are very slim.
Right.
So. But I would say educating people about whether their fears are irrational and what the statistic likelihood of something happening is probably the only way to go about it. Yeah. Or take, you know, like that instructor took me up and said, I'm going to take you up on the worst day and we're going to do the worst kind of flying and the plane's going to be fine and you're not, you know?
Yeah.
So, and now I'm like, you know, I fly this Comanche now that it's, you know, everyone keeps telling me, oh, that thing's so overbuilt. Like, you got a great airplane. I'm like, I like hearing that.
Please know? Tell me more. Yeah. Tell me more. So since you did your training later in life, looking back at who 18-year-old Brian with a Y was, do you think he would have been able to do the training? Because everything happens for a reason, right?
Like, sure.
If you would have been exposed to aviation earlier and maybe you had those fears and maybe a little more hard-headed and didn't want to do it, do you think you still would have done it?
I probably would have been able to do it. And I'm different now than I was then. Obviously, the older you get, for most people, hopefully you're not as much of a risk taker. I always joke that if I had started flying when I was 18, I probably wouldn't be here now, because I was a dumb kid, you know? And when I was a kid, I was a real dumb kid. So it's probably a good thing that I started doing this. You know, one, when I was paying for it, if I was a kid, my parents would have had to cover the, you know, and then I wouldn't probably take it as seriously. But doing it the way I've done it was probably the best story for me. I think I would have been able to get to the training because I've always been one, if I have a goal, I'll accomplish it. And I'm so a lot of times I don't set goals because I don't want to do stuff.
I don't have to do it.
I can just keep doing nothing and work out for me.
Your wife's like, exactly who you are.
Oh, yeah. So I probably would have said, okay, this is a goal I'm going to do, and I would have done it. But I don't think I could have really afforded flying under the age of 30 anyway.
Yeah.
It's just expensive. I mean, there's ways you can do it or whatever, but the kind of flying I would have wanted to do is the kind of flying I do now, going places, flying to Oshkosh, taking people with me. You know, I used to, when I was younger, I was like, I'll go look up ultralights on eBay because they're only $8,000 and you don't have to be a pilot. Like, I would have died so fast. But this is the kind of flying that I would have always wanted to do. And even if I had started training and gotten through it, I would have been like, well, I can't really afford it anyway, you know.
So what ratings do you have?
I just have my instrument. Okay. And I'm my commercial, my instructor tells me I'm ready for my check ride. I keep going and need one more lesson. But we're trying to get some DPs getting on their calendar in the next 2 weeks.
When you were deciding to do your private, did you have a goal of doing more than just a private, or was it like private and that's it?
I wanted to be a guy who, like, my goal was to only be a VFR daytime hobby pilot. That was my, because everyone's like, you need to get an instrument rating, it'll make you a better pilot. I'm like, nah, absolutely not. I don't want to be thinking and math and all this kind of stuff when I fly, and I never wanted to progress. And then of all things, we can jump into YouTube stuff later, this YouTube thing had sort of started, and the owner of Gold Seal reached out to me and he said, hey, would you be interested in partnering with us a little bit? And so we did some sponsorship type of things, and then he goes, hey, we're working on this instrument platform. Would you test it out for us? And I said, yeah, he knew he was a software guy. And he said, I'd like you to beta test it or whatever, and also you're a pilot, so you can probably, you know, try to break this thing for us. And so, you know, went through and I said, yeah, I think it's pretty solid. I didn't really find any bugs. I thought it was pretty good. I said, let me go ahead and take the test, find out if it really works. And so I went and took the instrument written and I passed it. And I was like, okay, so yeah, it works, got a good grade. And then I didn't think much past it. And then I was like, you know what? I should probably go take a check ride and all this kind of stuff. And so I started doing instrument flying, and then COVID hit. And so my written expired. And so I called Gold Seal again and said, can you give me another license for the program? And so I went through it again. I took the written again. That's the worst test you could ever take twice. And then I went out and did the check ride and passed. So, and now I'm working on my commercial because I'm dreaming about transitioning into being a professional pilot. So now I'm at the point going 10 years ago when I started this, I should have kept going, but really it was just, this is fun. And I'm having fun. And then now at my seasoned old age, I'm going, well, if I like doing this so much, why not make it a career?
Yeah. And 10 years ago, the airline space didn't look like what it did now, right?
So, yeah. That was a big part of it too. Because I had friends going, are you going to go to the airlines? I was like, I can't afford that.
Yeah. It's not possible. Well, now it's like, you see that new contract?
I can't afford it too.
You see that UPS, or you see that UPS contract? Like, I want some of that. Your wife's like, yeah, we do.
Yeah. Stay away from home for 4 nights.
We don't like you anyways.
Just keep the checks coming.
Yeah. What, between instrument and private, what was the biggest draw, or what was the hardest part going from a private pilot to an instrument pilot? Was there any moment, I guess I should say, where you were like, what the heck? Like, screw this. I'm not doing it.
My own brain was the biggest problem. I built the instrument in my head up to be like this PhD of aviation that's so hard, almost nobody can get it. And I've got pretty significant imposter syndrome as it is anyway. I'm like, everything I do that's successful, like, that's luck. But I almost convinced myself it was impossible for me. Meanwhile, I'm looking around, I'm like, there are a lot of people dumber than me with this rating.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I'm like, it wasn't that hard. The biggest challenge in the instrument was my own psyche going, are you sure you can do this? And some of that was reinforced. So the very first time I was in IMC, I was ready to sell the plane. It wasn't planned. My instructor and I were out working under the foggles. And as luck would have it, weather came in over the airport back home and got really, really low. And this was like my second instrument lesson. And we were learning how to fly like GPS approaches at one of the satellite airports. And as we're coming back, my instructor's like, well, there's clouds coming in. There's a little bit of buildup. It's getting kind of low. And we both decided, well, you're flying. This is what we're learning to do. Let's do it. I'd never been in the clouds before. I'm in a Cirrus, so I'm doing 165 knots. Not even, you know, I don't know anything about approach speeds or it's cliche. I'm, you know, firewall the throttle in the Cirrus. And so we get in the clouds, and the first thing is, of course, there's stuff coming at my windshield at 160 knots. And she's like, quit looking out the window. And I'm like, I can't look what's happening out there. Like, and you have this irrational fear of like, it's not a wall, but there's still stuff coming at you real fast, and then quickly lose the horizon. And then the tower starts scolding me because I'm doing it wrong. And I still haven't throttled down, but now I'm like, I'm looking at the approach. I'm trying to fly it. I'm doing 160, which is wrong. And so I'm doing everything wrong. And finally I go, I'm done. Your airplane. And she said, I forget what she said at that point, but I failed. And, she continued, like, I was like, we need to get out of here. And she's like, well, no, we'll just continue the approach. I was like, I'd never been in an instrument approach before. And so she did everything right and flew the approach and got us down. And she landed, and she's like, what are your thoughts? I said, I think we should sell the plane. That was the biggest moment. I really thought, I can't do this. And I've been telling myself for months, I can't do this just for no reason.
And you just affirmed everything, right? You're like, see, I told you.
I did. Yeah. I was like, I told you can't do it. And then so I talked to someone I know who's an extraordinarily confident, Scott Perdue. He's actually a YouTube guy, a channel called Flywire, and he has flown at Force. He has done everything. And I called him, and I said, this happened, and I'm trying to figure out if this is something I can get around. And he goes, well, he's like, come out to my hangar, bring your plane. And so what he did was he said, we're going to go out on the cloudiest day, and we're going to get a block of airspace. And he said, we're not going to do any projects. We're not doing approaches. We're just, you know how to fly a plane. You're a pilot. He's like, let's just do it in the clouds. No foggles, no tricks, no work. So we got this block of airspace. We were in the clouds, and he said, okay, just fly straight and level. And he said, just keep it straight and level. You don't have to do anything. There's nothing here. He's like, okay, Turn 90 degrees to the west. So basically got me over the whole, all these clouds are rushing up at the window. Stop worrying about that because it's new. Keep your eyes on your instruments. And at that time in my head, it almost became a video game. I was like, oh, I'm flying the attitude indicator. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to keep these needles here.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got these 19 different magenta lines over here. And I was like, okay, so if you block this out, now you're just dealing with data. And I'm a data guy. It's like, okay, well, I've got and I'm playing a game. This is really, really good. And so we did that for about 3 hours.
Yeah.
And as I landed, I said, okay, I think I can go back. And so I called my instructor and said, okay, I'm ready to do this again. And so
you're like, hey, can we not do it all at once this time though, too?
Well, it was too soon anyway. Yeah. You know, honestly, I don't know how you could mandate it, but I think people need to have real IMC before they should get it, because your brain needs so little information. And whether you're trying or not, when you're wearing foggles, out of the corner of your eyes,
you can still see.
You can still see.
Yeah.
And it's not even like you're trying, but that peripheral vision, your brain knows what to do with that information. And so you don't lose your horizon. But when you're in IMC, one, you can't take them off. And two, you're not getting any information. So you have to know how to do it. So I think there's, for me, I'm so glad that throughout my instrument training, there were multiple opportunities to fly in IMC for, I say, extended periods of time, 20, 30 minutes at a time, where it's like, okay, I have to do this and it's okay. But the very, very second lesson, just being blasted into it, not really even knowing, what I was supposed to be doing. It was just too much all at once. And, but I'm glad I went up with Scott. I'm glad we got to do that. And now I think it's fun. I used to always hear people talking about, breaking out and this, all these different things. And I'm like, y'all are weird. Now I'm like, first time we were flying back from a vacation, and I was like, this is the thing everyone talks about. And we broke out, and I was like, oh my God, it was just beautiful. The airport was out in front of us, and there were some more clouds in front of us we went into, and I was like, oh, we get to do it again. it was awesome. So I don't voluntarily go out and do a bunch of IMC flying, but when I'm in it now, I enjoy it because it's challenging and it's fun, and it gives me a sense of accomplishment.
All right. In your Comanche, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have your own personal minimums for IMC? Will you fly IFR down to minimums?
No. So I'll never be current outside of an IPC because my minimums are basically VA. I'll fly marginal if my family's not with me, but I'm not going to fly down to minimums.
So IFR was essentially just to get you out of a situation you get in.
It was more so like when I want to go to Oshkosh and I have to get through that layer, I can do it. If there was a sport IFR for pop-up clearances, I would have just gone that route. I have no interest in spending hours and hours in it. I have no interest in breaking out at minimums or, God forbid, going around in IMC. So if the airport's IFR, I won't fly.
Okay. Would be a big change on you if you're in the airlines.
Yeah, I know. Well, and then part of it's the equipment. I don't have an autopilot. I don't have,
For sure, yeah. Me flying the Latitude right now with Garmin G5000 and autopilot and everything, and then thinking about if I was to buy my own plane one day, it's like, I probably wouldn't be an IFR pilot with that plane either. It's like one engine, piston engine, adding full power, a couple hundred feet above the ground. Like, things could happen. Things could go wrong.
For sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I totally get that. Yeah. I would think the same way. You kind of mentioned YouTube. You're a funny guy.
Not really.
Funny looking. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's true. It's true.
You're a funny guy. When did the idea for YouTube, you know, to let your personality out, right? When did you come up with that?
I didn't. I was on there's a forum called Pilots of America. It's a fantastic forum. It's probably one of the largest aviation forums, and it's a very, very heavily GA-centric. And when I first got my license, my certificate, people pick on that. When I first got my certificate, my father had purchased an airplane called a Cicada TB-9, and I flew that plane all over the place. Not that that matters, but we flew it around for a while, and he decided he needed something faster, so Dad went and bought a Cirrus. And I went on the forum. I was like, cool, I got the Cirrus. Da, da, da. And like, I think the first comment was, oh, you can't fly a plane without a parachute. And I was like, what? And I mean, it just turned. And this was 8 or 9 years ago when I think their reputation wasn't quite what it is now. But there was so much flack about the stupid parachute. And people were like, oh, all I need are some Tundra tires and I can get any plane down anywhere. And I'm like,
Okay.
So for a few months, there was a lot of, and it wasn't everybody, but it was, you know, you always pick the negative out when, you know, people. But so I just decided I was going to, I always wrote comedy on this forum. I always took the different members of the forum and I would write the day in the life of this forum. And it was just complete satire. I used to love to write. And I always dreamed of like being a writer and having a blog and just having, I don't know, writing comedy. And so after all this serious stuff had happened or whatever, I don't know even why I picked up a video camera. I didn't have a video camera. I did that. This is the first video. I just taped a cell phone to my headset and I was going to go out and make a video that was like the serious pilot that everyone thinks, you know, I've become or whatever, just the dumb serious pilot. And so I did this video called How to Land a Cirrus. And the intent was just to put it on the forum. And I hadn't even thought about the internet, the sphere, and I was not a big social media like user. And so someone texted me and said, hey, get off my Facebook page. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, that video you put, it's on Facebook. And I was like, well, no, I just shared it on Pilots of America. And then it started getting shared. I don't think Instagram was a thing back then, but it was like, just, it went through social media. And so within a handful of days, it's like at 50,000 views. And I was like, whoa. And then so I did a video called How to Land a Cirrus. And I was like, but again, I'm just putting them on the forum. I didn't even know YouTube was like a real thing. And there was no even thoughts of monetization or any of that stuff. And then I did like this one called How to Pre-Flight a Cirrus, but I just kept wanting to make people on the forum laugh. And then, so I just kept making these videos. And then eventually, so I had a blog and I thought, okay, people are watching these videos. I have this blog with like 7 people that are subscribed to it. And the blog was called Just Plain Silly. It was comedy. And I was like, I'm going to call my YouTube channel that, hoping that it will drive attention over to my blog. That blog may or may not still exist, but there's still only 7 people subscribed to it. I was like, I hate the name of the channel. I never wanted to do video stuff. I was like, I'll use the video as a tool to get people to reread my writing. And then finally, I'm like, I'll just, whatever. We'll just keep making
videos. No more writing for me.
No more writing.
isn't it funny how like you have a plan, like you have the set plan, like, all right, this is what I want to do. This is how this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then something else happens. Like you follow the avenue somewhere else. It's kind of like when you started flying. It's like, I didn't want to do anything else other than be a private pilot. That's what you said. And now here you are contemplating going to the airlines.
I know. It's weird.
It's crazy, right?
I know. It's crazy. Yeah. It's cool though. Cause it's, I don't, but now I have a fire under me about something which I haven't had in a while. So it's like this, oh, there's this new big thing I can accomplish.
Yeah.
And so it's motivating versus like, well, it's Saturday. I'll go fly to get a hamburger. Now it's like, here's 15 things I need to get done if I want to go do this thing that I'm now telling people I want to do. Cause so I have to do it. Like I want to do this. And it's like, the more I put it out there, the more it's like, okay, we're going to do this. Like this is me putting a goal out there. So I'll accomplish it.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. I'm enjoying the new, like, all right, there's this big future thing that I can work towards.
When you say you had an imposter syndrome, is that as a pilot or is that as a creator or
every aspect everything? Of my life?
All the above. I, for the longest time, never really felt like I was a pilot until I finally got the job I have now. Like, I was building time for aerial survey. It's like, this doesn't count. I wouldn't even tell people I was a pilot. Like, when I was at a bar or hanging out with friends, like, I'm not telling them I'm a pilot because they're going to be like, what airline do you fly for? It's like, oh, I fly a Cessna 310 around Texas at 4,000 feet. Yeah. And they're like, what's that? It's like, all right, I don't want to do this. You know, like, well, when are you going to go to the airline? It's like, well, eventually, probably, maybe, I don't know. But even the next job I flew freight, still don't feel like a pilot. Like, I thought being a pilot in my brain was once you made it. Essentially, whatever your end goal was. So I can understand that as well, which is crazy because you are a pilot.
It is crazy. I know. And what's funny is like, I'm not dumb, like, but and you're not either, but like just being a private pilot and how many people actually do that is such a tiny number. Mm-hmm. Like it is, we have a, you know, the people we hang out with or whatever, everyone's in the same sort of sphere. So you don't see it, but when you're around non-pilots, you're in the minority. Like it's mm-hmm. a very challenging, difficult, you know, I always tell people, the hardest thing about flying is it doesn't build on it. Like knowing about weather doesn't help me know how to, you know, manage the engine, doesn't help me know about how lift, like none of these things. It's not like, you know, I learned to add, so multiplication makes sense. And then it's like, it's learning 20 different unrelated things. And so it's very difficult. And so just to become a private pilot is like, you're a pilot, mm-hmm. you know?
Agreed.
So
let's take a break from today's episode to hear from our sponsor, RAA. As pilots, we make getting from point A to point B look easy. Just like getting to Oshkosh, it's so much easier to fly than to drive. But if you're like me, financial planning for your future isn't always so straightforward. Fortunately, my partners at RAA created a manual for that. Their complete financial planning guide outlines the 7 key factors you'll want to consider when preparing a strong financial plan for tomorrow, in terms that are simple and direct, just the way pilots like it. Best of all, it's free. So download your complete financial planning guide today at raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. That's raa.com/pilot-to-pilot. And now back to today's episode. With your kind of video creations and Instagram and stuff like that, has it been tough for you to try to, I don't want to say that clickbaity stuff, but to try to like come up with funnier stuff? Has it distracted you from your flying at all? Or have you been able to really kind of like separate the two and really focus on like, all right, flying comes first, like always fly the airplane. If comedy happens, then it happens.
That's a good question. There's definitely times when I say, I'm going to go out and fly today because I want to make this video, especially early in the channel. Now, a lot more of my videos are made with me sitting in a chair talking and then just showing video of the flight and narrating mm-hmm. it. I've always done a very good job of not being distracted by the cameras, and I've always been very concerned about that perception. So I'll go make a five-minute video, but it takes 2 or 3 hours because I'll go up and I'll have like little bullet points on a piece of paper and I'll just, you know, I'm flying the plane. I'm doing what I'm doing. ATC gets quiet. I'll be on flight following and I'll just kind of run out this line and then I'll go do another line. I don't ever sit there and just go, okay, I'm going to talk this whole paragraph and, you know, do all those kind of things. Yeah. And, you know,
hello, my name is Brian with OY.
It's because some of my stuff is jokes that are written and I know I'm going to say this and I know I'm going to say that. I would say the only time I film anything that's more than just a little snippet is probably if I'm just ad-libbing and I'm talking and saying, mm-hmm. hey, today we're going to be doing this kind of thing. And, you know, just like you'd be having a conversation in the cockpit. There have been moments where it's very tempting to get distracted by the cameras. I'm hyper aware of when it happens. And I think I've done a good job of not letting it happen. Not mostly, but a good portion of that is I don't want someone to call me out for that and have to go, yeah, you're right. You're right. And I'll say this, I know a lot of creators and I've flown with a lot of creators. One of my favorite flights, I was with my friend Dan Milliken in his 210 and we were flying, and, you know, one of the cameras fell off. And like your natural reaction, if we were sitting here and a camera fell off the desk, would be to lean over and pick it up. And it was just like, you know, I saw the camera fall and I looked at him. I mean, the guy was flying the plane. It was like, he didn't hear it, didn't see it. And it was just like, well, that's not part of flying the plane. We'll get to it later or whatever. And it's like, that's kind of how you have to be. It's very probably tempting to become distracted by these types of things. But mm-hmm. if something that's not flight related happens, deal with it when you can, but don't let that become a priority. Cause one, you can get yourself hurt. And two, you're going to have to go tell someone like, yeah, you're right. I did the wrong thing. And that's probably going to feel crappy.
And it's also interesting because when you posted your first video, you got the essentially instant success, right? So you got the benefit, the dopamine rush, everything, where 95% of the time someone posts their first video, it's, you might get a view or two, you know, it's like, so you were kind of chasing that high from the beginning, right? So maybe the temptation or not, but maybe just kicked a drive in you to create more and be better. But
so it's interesting because I had this conversation because smaller creators, and I don't mean it in any offensive way, smaller creators will come to me and be like, you know, how do you do it? How do you get this? And I would say I wouldn't be doing this if the first couple of videos weren't successful. Like if my first video got 300 views, that's all I thought it was going to do. And it was just going to be a joke I made on this forum. And then, you know, my whole comedy was this forum and this blog I was trying to build. I didn't care about it. So I'm lucky in the sense that I could make a video and people would start watching it right away. Now, you know, a few videos in, I started to kind of normalize, but my normalize was higher than most people. I, I'm I don't think I've ever had a video get 300 views or something like that. They've always been, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 views in the low, mm-hmm. low area. So, probably 2 years into making videos, I just made videos to make videos, to make people laugh. That was, and I kind of wish I still did. I met a guy named Bobby White. He had a channel called Flying Doodles and he wanted to come.
Oh, I've heard of that.
He wanted to do a video in, is either the Grumman or the Cirrus. And, he had a huge channel. I said, what's the secret? He goes, okay, well, the secret is you got to do 15 minutes videos. You got to do 2 a week. I said, done. Not doing 2 a week. I do my videos ad hoc. Like I can do 2 a week. I'm not, you know, I don't have a list of topics. I've got to think of it. I've got to write. My rule used to be I need 5 jokes and they have to be funny enough to make me laugh or whatever. And then I've got to work them in there. And I was like, I can't, it takes me weeks to do that. And I was like, so sometimes I would make a video and I'd make another one the next week. And then I'd make another one 3 months later. And I was like, I just can't do it. And then I met Dan Milliken and Dan Milliken was like, okay, you gotta be consistent. And so suddenly I was in this fear of creators who were trying to game the algorithm to create success. And that was never like my motivation, but then I started working with them. And then I started seeing some, you know, I got to the monetization point and the merchandising point and then, you know, companies talking to you and acknowledging you,
and going,
okay. And then this is good or bad.
Yeah.
I have this hobby that's very expensive and I have a savings account that's
depleting.
But it's like, so as I set a goal and I said, okay, I had little bitty goals. I don't know if this is inappropriate to talk about, but I was like, I want to see if I can make YouTube start to pay my bills. And so my hanger was $150 a month. And I was like, okay, once it's paying for that, that's one less thing that I got to pay for out of pocket. So I did that. And then I have a payment on my airplane. I was like, okay, once I get there, then I got that. So now my monthly expenses have gone down a little bit. I'm less stressed about, you know, having to take money out of savings. And so I just kept adding little airplane expenses to it. And my channel right now, 40,000 subscribers, I'm about break even on owning a Comanche. So it's basically between the sponsors and the ad revenue and all the different things that come from it. It's annual hangar, my trip to Oshkosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to leave Oshkosh with about $200 in my aviation bank account. So it really is break even, but I'm able to do that. And it's not like it's, oh, you're just getting this for free. I'm working my butt off. When they go to sleep at night, I'm editing video probably 5 nights a week. I try not to do it too much, you know, when there's family time and stuff. So it is, you know, when lights are out, I'm editing. But it's very nice to go, okay, as long as I can keep this up, I don't have to feel guilty about how much this plane's costing and how much aviation's costing and stuff like that. So it's unfortunate that I'm no longer, to some extent, I kick myself sometimes and go make the video you want to watch, Brian, like make the video you want to watch. Don't make the video that you think will attract eyeballs. But I there is definitely a new drive and that drive is, okay, this is helping me support my hobby without impacting my, you know, family's, you know, financial situation or whatever. So there's and you know, people told me you're going to end up down this path and it's going to become about the money. And I'm like, it kind of does. Mm-hmm. But once you get a little bit of it, you go, okay, maybe I can offset some of the expenses of this crazy hobby. And so that's where I'm at right now. As I sit here is the YouTube videos are, I'm break even with my flying and I fly 140, 150 hours a year. So it's, for me, that's success. You know, I'm not profiting off of it and, you know, or whatever, but it's very nice to be able to do that. So
we're going back to the consistency thing. Mm-hmm. So I started my podcast, I was doing like kind of like you, like it was whenever it was convenient for me.
Yeah.
Right? Like whenever I thought it was going to be good. Maybe once every 2 weeks, once a month-ish. Mm-hmm. My wife was like, if you need to do this, you need to do it every single week. Wow. And I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
That can't
not.
Be done.
And I'm doing it once a week now. So
you're like, there's not enough aviation content?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I hate hearing myself talk. Same. I can't do that anymore. So I started doing it more consistent. And that consistency, if anyone has any, like, be consistent.
Yeah.
Have a consistent schedule with that. Is the best thing you can possibly do for your creating career, whatever it is, being in your family, just be consistent.
Yeah.
Be there, be consistent. And you will eventually put in the work, you will see some return.
It's interesting you say that. I don't look at my analytics that much. I go in these, it ebbs and flows how much I look and care about the analytics. And sometimes like it doesn't matter. But my analytics do say Sunday morning between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., my audience, which is clearly are heathens, that's the best. Yeah, it's the best time for, or maybe they are, and they're just like, oh, "This is boring." But that's YouTube says this is when you need to be releasing videos, and so I've always done that. But I don't know if it mattered. we did this meet and greet thing out here, and a handful of people were like, every Sunday morning we get around the computer, me and my kid, and we watch your video. And I was like, crap, it does matter. Yeah, because I always secretly like, maybe I just do this one tomorrow night. But so I heard that a couple of times. I was like, okay, so it to some extent it matters because it was mentioned to me yesterday.
So obviously you said even back in the day, it's like, all right, I got five jokes. They got to be five jokes. Do you have an approval process for those jokes? Do you have like, do you pass it off to your wife? Like, hey, is this a little too much?
Sometimes. Yeah. There's something like the other day, like I'll ask her because she's very good. She's funny. And she's very good at me saying, okay, here's a topic. And she'll just real quick come up with something like, oh, that's brilliant. The business card I have in my pocket right now is her idea.
I'll see it. Let me see it. Pull it out.
We were going for...
Putting you on the spot.
Oh, no.
It's it better be brilliant.
Oh. It's a lawyer. It's an aviation attorney.
That's, that's a story for another day right there. Let's see it.
So that's my business card. So I...
I like it. That's really funny.
So I've been getting reported to the... You can have it. I've got a bunch.
What?
Describe it.
Oh, we're describing the... I can't read. Frequent FISDO visitor. Cardholder is entitled to a punch on each visit to the FISDO. Upon receiving the 10th punch, the cardholder shall receive a free sandwich prepared by the FISDO and a pardon for any aviation-related nonsense that landed them there. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you were one away.
Yeah, so my business card has 9 punches on it. So that was her idea. She's like, because I was getting turned into the FAA a lot. And she's like...
What'd you do to get turned into the FAA?
Nothing. The first time, someone posted on Facebook that they were looking for an instructor, and I just typed, I'll do it, but if you got to pay me cash because I'm not a CFI and I don't want it on my taxes. Someone screenshotted that and sent it to the FAA. And so they called me in and said, we need to make sure you haven't been taking money for teaching people to fly. And I was like,
you're like, I'm not a CFI.
I'm not a CFI.
I can't teach anyone how to fly.
So went through that. And I the problem is I posted on Facebook, like one of you guys thought it was really funny to turn me into the FAA. Here's how my day went. Like you guys, this is, I was really agitated. Second time I got turned in, I was taking my instrument written test for the second time. And I just posted on Facebook. I said, hey, real quick, I'm taking my instrument written test. Does anyone know the maximum distance between VORs at 18,000 feet? Never mind the proctors here. And I tagged the testing center.
I feel like I remember this.
Yeah. And so everyone thought it was funny except the testing center.
Yeah. Is this something you should have let your wife look at before you decided to post
I posted that from in my bed the morning before the test. The testing center was closed. My test wasn't scheduled for 4 hours. And the only real issue, and I chose not to make it be an issue, was I didn't cheat and they knew I didn't cheat. Yeah. But they reported me to the FAA for cheating, which could have been a bad idea for them. It's in the FARs. That you shouldn't knowingly falsely report someone. And the guy and I got into it on the phone, and I really thought about telling him, like, I want you to understand the severity of what you've done. But I was like, you know what, I'll let it go. I don't want to get in a fight or whatever. And I did something stupid too. I'm not dumb.
She shook her head like,
stupid. But so I, you know, people always joke that, oh, your videos get you in hot water all the time. I'm like, no, I've never been. Every time I've been turned in, you know, it's just been me making a dumb comment on Facebook that someone who's mad at me or doesn't like me would, you know, you don't have to like me. There are a lot of people out there that are looking for excuses to show you. And there's a lot of those out there.
Yeah.
And I don't care anymore. But those first two times, but the FAA, they came out and they said, yeah, we reviewed it. The second time they called me laughing. They said, hey, Brian, this is North Texas Fizzo. Like the dumbest, funniest thing just landed on our desk and we got to talk to you. But, one, we think this is awesome and you need to keep doing it. But he goes, someone's got to stick up their ass and you're just going to have to deal with this. This type of stuff, if you're going to keep doing it, but they thought it was funny. So I was like,
do you know them by name now? Do they know you?
I haven't spoken to them in a while, but I had some friends over there that I actually would call them periodically and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And I have,
that's your pre-approval.
I do. I have two friends who are aviation attorneys and we talk every once in a while. And I'm like, here's my thought. And they always say, you're going to be fine. But my favorite one, this guy, he, every time I talk to him, he's like, just understand, I can sue you for not liking your shirt. And whether I'm in the wrong or you're in the wrong, it's going to cost you money. So you need to think about that. So, but I do call people and go, is this too far? And I did a video where I stuck a windsock on the wing of my airplane so that you're always flying into the wind. And I'm very proud of the video because it came out so good. My attorney called me and he goes, Brian, I don't want to be the guy to have this conversation with you until you've gone too far, but it's time for me to sit you down and say, you are about to find yourself in really hot water. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, you can't put things on your wings and go flying. I go, you didn't watch the whole video. He goes, I watched the whole video. And he's like, you need to pull it down. I go, pull up the video. And he just yelled explicative, because like at the end, I was so real looking that I had to show how I like traced this thing and cropped it out and superimposed the windsock. Yeah. And I took a windsock and I put it on my wing and I got a leaf blower and I stuck the camera in the window and I blew it with the leaf blower. And then I went and flew my plane and just filmed the wing with a camera in the same spot. And then I merged them. So it looked like I was flying with this windsock on my plane. But this, he called me. He's like, he goes, man, you got me. He's like, I thought that was so real. And he's like, you may actually want to consider taking it down because it looks so real. And I was like, no, I'm not. So
I love it. I'm looking at your business card here. All right. So you got justplainsilly.com, yeah. worldsgreatestpilot.com.
Yeah, that's I own World's Greatest Pilot LLC.
Oh, what do you do with it?
Just own it.
Okay.
And yeah. I have the website.
So what happens if I go?
I'm trying to knock off, like I want people when they search for World's Greatest Pilot, I want Amelia Earhart and all these other people, Bob Hoover, I want them to start falling off and me to come up.
Is it just like a picture of you or is it redirected?
It's a really bad WordPress website that I don't maintain.
Yeah.
It's, I don't have the time or energy. Sometimes I'll put where I'm at, if, or, you know, but it's it may as well not be there.
So what's preflight data?
Preflight data is a great thing. I still fly with paper.
Okay.
If you fly with paper, you go to preflightdata.com. I should probably do a video about this. I haven't in a while. Let's say you're going to fly from, I don't know, DFW to Oshkosh. You just go to my website. There's two inputs. You put DFW, Oshkosh, and it's going to print out a kneeboard. You fold it in half, and it's got all your frequencies, your runways, your pattern altitudes, ATIS, and it's got the current METAR information at the time you printed it out. And it's got space for you to write your squawk code and all this kind of different stuff on there. So all the things, I was a VFR pilot when I made it, all the things that they ask you when you say, I want to get flight following, what's your altitude, what's your direction of heading, all these kind of things. And so it was prompted. I was at Addison Airport, and I was taking off, and I said, I want to get flight following to Delta Tango Oscar. And they said, okay, what's your on-course heading? And I go, I don't know.
Whatever it's a, yeah.
So I was like, I don't know, 180. And they're like, okay, 180. And I was like, I got home and it was 180. I was like, oh, that's great. I was like, I can't be in that situation anymore where I haven't done this planning.
You're
and
like, I'm the world's greatest pilot.
Oh, yeah. But I would find myself going to ForeFlight and SkyVector and all these different sites to get pieces of information. And I was like, I don't have time for this. So I want to build a website. So no matter where I'm at, I can just go get on a computer, type it out, and I got my kneeboard. And I thought, since I built it on the web, I'll share it out there. And I think I've got something like, probably close to 80,000 kneeboards that have been generated in the last 3 or 4 years. So,
nice.
But that's, if you're one of these people who still fly with paper, it's fantastic.
I didn't know that many people still fly with paper.
I've got people have donated to me because they're like, don't ever take this down. Don't ever let it go. I use this on every flight. And I'm like, oh man, there've been times where I thought, I'm like, this isn't important, but.
So it's important to someone.
It's important to someone.
And then we have METAR AF. I've seen you post about that.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one. So social media is bad. I was on social media and someone chimed in and there's this application called What the Forecast. And it's weather with a twist. It's the weather, but it's like, it's very hateful. And someone goes, we should have that for pilots. And I was like, oh, I'm a programmer. I can do that. Because for my pre-flight data website, I pull real data down from the FAA, all the websites out there, or the information's out there, and you can pull it for free. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to create a website where the METAR information is available. It's published. It's the same place ForeFlight and all your applications get it from. And so what I did was I created a snarky joke database-based engine that takes information and it says like, oh, it's you know, I don't know, it's IFR out, so you're not going to be able to see what you're smashing into. So it's all like, it takes the, oh, you're looking at it now? Oh gosh, some of them, but when we went public with it, I tried to take all the swear words
out.
Is
that an app too, or just a website?
It's an app now as a website. Let's see.
You took out the swear words? Is Carrot Weather, wasn't Carrot Weather similar?
I don't know what that is.
It was a big app. I don't know if it's still, did you ever hear about Carrot Weather? No? No? Okay, cool.
Visibility 8 miles, so you have no excuse for what you're about to do to that airplane. there's one, it's like wind gusting 22 knots. This is the day we transition ownership to the insurance company. I take the legitimate METAR information from the weather sites, and based on the codes, I have responses that it pulls up. And then this was probably... I can only do so much. And so I opened up, I have on my page a place where you can go and say, hey, if it's missed, here's the response. And so people can now it's crowdsourced. So people are putting in there. And so now someone came up to me the other day and like, hey, this doesn't make any sense at all. And I was like, oh, I didn't write it. Let me go.
Yeah.
So now I have it where you can go submit ideas and I vet them and I have to go approve them.
I'm about to submit a ton of ideas.
Do it. It's fun. Go download the app and we're working on What the TAF, which is going to have the area forecast. That one's a little more complicated because it's a lot more information.
Yeah.
But so METAR AF is a fun website and a fun app. And I've gotten a lot of positive response from
cool.
it. So
I think it's cool. I remember when it came out and I was like, this is pretty cool. I like it. It's nice. I like it. That's really cool. So since you are a creator, if you like being called that or not, but other people, like everyone wants to be a creator, right? Like someone wants to have a YouTube channel, have a podcast, whatever it may be, be an Instagram star. What are your tips for someone that wants to do that? Like, how would you kind of help them into this side of the industry and make sure they go down the right path and not the wrong path?
Knowing what I know now, I can't tell you what to do to be successful. I can tell you what not to do. I've tried every shortcut and they don't work. So that's a whole separate topic. First off, figure out what your plan is and what you want to do and who you want to be. You're going to evolve into a space at some point. And then ask yourself, would I watch this?
Yeah.
And what's different about it? Because, you know, there are some people, I don't want this anyway to sound hateful. There are some people who got into this early on by sticking cameras and following their flights and got a lot of traction, and they're fantastic people. I adore them. You can't do that anymore. You can't just put a GoPro, and they're not doing that now. They've evolved and they're doing amazing things. But you can't just put a GoPro on the wing of your plane and go fly and expect to do anything with it. So, yeah. So how are you going to be different? You know, are you going to crash that plane? Are you going to, you know, you have to do something to stand out amongst the crowd. And again, I didn't set out to do that, but that I, you know, my favorite compliment, it's not even really a compliment, but people are like, you're the only person doing this. And I'm like, I love hearing that. Cause it's like, okay, I like knowing that I'm not, you know, trying to copy anyone or do anything run of the mill or whatever. So figure out if you're doing something different. People ask me, where are there voids in this aviation? I've told several people this. I said, someone who flies a lot should go start like an FBO review channel. Like it'll be very hard to grow, but once it grows, you're going to have FBOs going, hey, you know, it's like, I want to know when I'm going to Oshkosh, if I want to get fuel, this one's got drinks and cheap gas, and they've got a car, or they've got, you know, their close proximity to this thing or whatever. I went into an FBO once and they had these recliners in front of these really big widescreen TVs, and there was a football game on and they had popcorn going. And I was like, man,
that's a lot.
It was nice to kind of stop.
That's why I'm a pilot. Yeah.
Right. I was like, that's kind of cool. If I'm tired and I need to take a break and on, you know, a long trip, I was like, that channel will take forever to grow. But once it has people's attention, you're going to have FBOs going, hey, we want you to come feature us. But something like that, because like if you think you're gonna get a 172, unless you're just like super quirky and you're like charismatic and you can capture people's eyeballs, you know, you're gonna have to figure out what's different. But I will probably guarantee anyone that you may start out with a plan and you'll end up probably different than where you thought you were, because you'll sort of fill out a niche. But I don't think you can say, I want to film my flights and start a YouTube channel. You might, but you're gonna be the 300 view guy, because everyone's doing it. It's very saturated, and is this such a small niche? It's just, there's not a big audience for
Agreed.
It. So, and there's a whole lot of people out there that kind of roll their eyes at it. They're like, oh gosh, look, it's another guy with a camera and a plane. And I've heard that too. So, my advice is, one, don't expect it to work. Two,
Agreed.
See if you can differentiate yourself. Get thick skin. This woman right here will tell you, I remember telling her, we walk a lot. And I remember telling her on a walk, I was like, I think I'm going to quit doing this. Like, this guy is calling me names and stuff. And she goes, pulls it up. She's like, just 100 comments and one guy being a jerk. And I it hurts so bad. Like this, you know, just these little things. And it's like, now it's funny. I'm 7 years into this. Now I'm like, bring it. You know, like my favorite thing is like, leave me a bad comment and I'll pin it to the top and everyone will go after that person. I'm like, you came here and you came to my house and did that.
That's funny.
You know, thick skin is very important. And then there's nothing I could say to convince anyone of how difficult this is. Yeah. Like, people are like, oh, it's really hard. It's so hard. It is so hard. And then be good at handling disappointment. When I will put so much time and effort and sometimes money into a video and it falls flat. And then I'll make one where I just do absolutely nothing and it's really successful and I couldn't tell you why. Yeah. So I could go to Flight Shops right now and be like, what's the secret? And he'd go, I don't know.
Flight Shops. Get a chop.
So it's a lot of unknown. It's a lot of experimenting. But I would say for me, I can always go back to, and my wife will tell you, one of her favorite things is she'll come in the office and I'll just be busting up laughing. And she's like, I love it when I come in here and you're laughing at yourself, because I'll make a joke or something. And when I'm writing it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of funny. It's kind of funny. And I watch it back and I was like, oh my God, that is hilarious. And I almost go like, who wrote that? Like, but when I get back into that kind of mental mode, that's when I'm the happiest doing it. And sometimes it resonates and sometimes it doesn't. And when it does, that's great. The other go-to, and this is ugly, is current events will work. Like if something happens, Trevor Jacobs jumps out of a plane, go make a video about it. You'll get a lot of views, you know, but that stuff in aviation, a lot of it's not good.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to be the guy reporting on things that are negative. Those people do great, right? but I don't want to be the guy talking about a plane that went down.
Nope.
And you know, there's only how many times is Trevor Jacobs going to, you know, do this thing or, you know, whatever thing going to happen where it's got everyone's attention, you know, but the current event stuff, you get eyeballs because not just pilots are searching it. People are like, it gets outside of your base.
Yep.
And so, but again, that's not going to be long lived success. That's going to be like flash in the pan, like, oh, I got this. And then those people who aren't in your base that went and watched it, they're not coming back.
Yep.
You know, your base will keep coming back. So you can, you know, make videos for your base. You can throw stuff over the fence every once in a while, but unless it brings them in and they become part of your base, it'll give you a quick high. But
I also don't expect to make money.
Don't expect to make money.
Yeah.
You'll spend so much more time and money. Like I said, two videos a week, I'm going on 6 years. And like I said, it's paying for my plane and stuff, but I am not a wealthy person. I'm trying to figure out how I just got to buy my son a car, you know, got normal things to do.
And sell I'm the like, plane.
You know, how dare you? Yeah. She's sitting right here, dude.
Oh, is that an option?
All right, this is over.
She actually got this whole thing together. That's why we're here today.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you about the airplane after we get home.
Sorry.
Don't expect to make money.
Do not.
There are people doing it. Don't compare yourself to other people.
Nope. Be yourself. It's hard, but yeah.
Do it. Find a way to make sure you enjoy it, because if you're not doing something you enjoy, then it's work. And if it's work that doesn't pay, then you're going to be mad. Yeah. So
I have some rapid fire questions.
I have rapid fire answers ready to go. That's weird. You know, I was just going to say that.
Is what am I going to say? They have rapid fire answers, but they take forever to do their answers.
I was like, dude, I'm literally like, what am I going to do with all these answers I'm thinking of? Is it 10 questions? Because that's how many answers I have.
I think we have 11.
I'm screwed. Yeah, that last one is going to take the rest of the day.
Well, that's the last one first.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, what's your favorite airplane ever made?
Favorite airplane ever made? The Commander 114. It just looks beautiful on the ramp. I love it.
That's my dad's favorite plane.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about it. I just love the way it looks.
He said it's very roomy on the inside. He said it's a great plane.
It just looks so cool.
Favorite airline?
Southwest. I love the 737s with the old engines with the thrust reversers.
Ugliest airplane you've ever seen?
Oh, that Tanzania air truck thing. I love ugly planes. I want one so bad. I wish Mike Patey would Draco up one of those things. I love ugly airplanes. That's my favorite ugly airplane.
That should be a new question. What's your favorite ugly airplane?
Dude, the uglier the... I love that Grizz thing that Rutan crapped out over there in the corner. I look at that every year and I'm just like, that is the...
That's my plane.
Worst.
That's a Brian with a Y plane right there.
I love it.
What's something you wish you knew before you became a pilot?
Wish I knew before I became a pilot. Well, that's not a good rapid fire question.
I know. You're right.
I don't wish I knew how much it was going to cost me, because I wouldn't have done it. That would probably be a good go-to answer. I wish I knew that there's way less to be afraid of than I thought there was, because fear holds me back in so many aspects of life. And now I don't have a lot of that, but I wish I could have known or convinced myself that move on.
Yeah. All right, here's a good one. Who's your least favorite aviation creator? I'm just kidding.
I've been meaning to talk to you. Probably me.
Who's someone in the industry you'd like to meet most?
Which industry?
This one, aviation.
Oh, aviation?
Yeah, so like anything. Like not content creator, not anything like that. Just like someone that could be alive, someone that could have died, anyone.
I don't know a lot of information about people. I have so many questions about the guys who fly around the world, the guys, the Cessna, the Hacienda that flew for 64 days, like these endurance flights. I have so many questions about how people, amazing, like it's not so much about that person, I know anything about them, but there's some amazing flights out there. Like, what were you thinking? Like, how did you think that this was even something you wanted to do? Like, where did you get that? Like, I don't know. I'm going to do this thing that to me sounds completely impossible. Mm-hmm. So anytime someone has created something that's a beyond normal, you know, human ability, I'm like, I just kind of want to know what your thought process was, the psychology behind this. I don't have a specific one, but people who've accomplished great things, especially with relation to endurance, duration, stuff like that. I'm just like, you know, I'm one where 64 days. I'm like, I don't think I want to.
Yeah, like, no, that's not for me.
No. So people like that.
Airbus or Boeing?
I couldn't tell the difference. In fact, when I was a kid, everything was 747, 737. Now I'm like, I don't know. It might be an Airbus.
You might have that choice soon, though.
Okay.
Yeah, you never know.
I've only heard what other people say, but they all look the same to me right now.
Least favorite airport you've ever had to land at?
Least favorite airport I've ever had to
like
land at?
Like one that's like always trouble, one that you don't like to go to.
There is an airport. What's it called? Dallas Air Park. It's inside. It's right next to a Class D airport that's really close to my airport. And you've got to get your ATIS, and then you got to get on with Center at DFW. before you can talk to Addison Tower, before you can land at this little tiny ratty destroyed nasty runway satellite airport. So it's like I'm just going to an uncontrolled one step above a grass strip, but I got to talk to 9 people and get all this information and get permission to get into because of its location. So there's real no reason for me to go there. I've gone there to make certain content where I need a dilapidated airport, but mm-hmm. it's too much effort. There's no ROI on flying there.
What's your favorite airport?
My favorite airport, it's got to be, first one that comes to mind is Fredericksburg. There's an airport, Gillespie Field. They have this thing called the Hangar Hotel. It's such a great place. They've taken this hangar and turned it to look like an old World War II bunker. It's a hotel and there's a diner next to it. And it's like going back in time. The town's great. We mm-hmm. go out there and it's just like, yeah. It's kind of a happy place. And there's always like so many different airplanes there. So you just kind of land. It's like Oshkosh. You land and you're like, oh, I'm in this great place. And I intentionally didn't say Oshkosh because that's really my favorite.
Would you rather fly as many long flights or as many trip? Let me rephrase this. Would you rather fly?
This doesn't feel rapid fire. No, when you deliver it like that.
Would you rather fly the longest flight possible in your Comanche or as many short flights as you can?
Oh, it's taking off and landing all day long. Even now, I will go beat up the pattern all day. Landing is my even now. So I got logged 1,700 landings. My goal is to as delicately as possible center line between my knees. Like I've tried to never atrophy in that. That is the biggest challenge to me, and I love landing a plane. So I will take short flights, 100 short flights over one long flight any day.
Right. IFR or VFR? I think I know the answer to that one. We talked about it before.
I want to be more IFR.
Yeah.
I'm not super, I tend to stay current. I wouldn't say I'm very proficient and I'm very aware of my improficiency. I would like to be more confident and fly more IFR. Opportunity doesn't present itself very much, but I love VFR flying. I want to love IFR flying.
What's your dream airplane to buy?
Dream airplane to buy? Obviously, twin Comanche. See, I can't rapid fire.
Interesting.
I was saying today, I say this. Most of what I know about planes comes from their appearance. I've been saying recently, I like the Comanche so much, my next plane will probably be a twin Comanche. But man, the Velocity is such a cool looking plane. I don't know much about them. I've never been in one, but that thing just looks.
They have one at the Garmin booth. You go look at it? It's right behind the Garmin booth?
No, I didn't.
Twin Velocity?
Oh, the twin Velocity.
Oh, you want the single?
Yeah, I don't care. I just think those are. I knocked Bert Rutan for his other mistakes, but that Velocity is just a freaking sweet machine. Yeah. It looks like a spaceship. So that's something I would love to fly. But again, when you say favorite airplane, I always just go on what I think looks the coolest.
What airplane does your wife want? If she could choose,
she wouldn't even know.
No, she's not like a serious.
She'd probably want a caravan, like a Cessna that was spread out and have 8 friends and luggage.
I do like the Cirrus though. Do they have a 6-seater?
No,
I mean the jet, right?
Serious jet, who can you be?
3.5 million, you got that.
YouTube
like
channel.
And subscribe.
Yeah, smash that like button.
Smash that like button.
Smash that serious handle. So Aaron's thing with flying is I don't think she cares about flying. Like she just cares about waking up and being in a new city.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, waking up. She falls, it's clear prop, it's like sleep.
Yeah.
So
my last question will kind of be with both of you guys. Kind of the relationship wise in aviation, if one of the other is not into aviation, how do you come to someone and be like, hey, I want to buy an airplane? How does that conversation happen? Or how do you kind of let him do his thing when it's very expensive and it's really him to like your time is gone, like you're not with your family, right? How is that kind of dynamic work and how would you recommend for...
It starts with me going, look, it's a depreciated asset. Like we can always sell it. Like it's me begging and pleading and convincing her that this is... And if it's a bad idea, we can just get our money back. that's my end of the thing. But yeah. I don't know you... I don't think I ever had to convince you that we should buy a plane.
So we met when we were 16 and 18 and... I mean, at that point, he took me to Addison Airport. Like, we're watching airplanes land, and he's like, one day I'm going to fly planes. You know, I love airplanes. Like, I've always known that, and I always knew that was going to happen. And so when he finally got around to it, I mean, we're both good at supporting one another, I think. And so this is so in his blood or whatever that, like, I couldn't imagine— telling him no, like, and that we don't have that relate. Like, we don't tell each other no. You know, I mean, we discuss things, but
it's usually like, "Oh, you want a plane? Okay, how do I get a horse?"
Are you a horse person?
Yes,
we don't have a horse, but we probably will at some point.
You got horsepower in the airplane.
I got 250.
But I have like he got into it, and then I just happened to enjoy it too.
Yeah,
And then it's great, especially the Comanche. I mean, you know, we took the kids to Gulf Shore. Well, we did the Cirrus. Sorry, yeah. I always think we did that. But anyway, like it's big enough we can travel with it and go places. And so that helps. It really, really helps that the YouTube channel helps cover the cost because I don't feel it. And so,
I think if she felt it, we'd probably be having conversations about how do you do this more cheaply. I'd probably be looking at like a 170 or even the Grumman. I wouldn't have been able to sell the Grumman and have this plane if not for the being able to subsidize it with YouTube, because the Grumman was a very cheap plane to afford.
All right, so everyone keep watching. Yeah, or else you're gonna have to get a different airplane. All right, Brian with a Y. Yeah. That's all I got for you, man.
All right, well, thank you very much for having me. This has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me take a quick video. I mean, you can turn it off now, but
Aviation, that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Like I said before, please, 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 you see someone's phone, you know, go to Spotify, hit download, like, subscribe, share it, whatever you need to do, just to get more people in the Aviation. More pilots is better for all of us. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all the support. The hats are unbelievable. Check out Bold Aviator, Bold Aviator hats. I mean, obviously the Pilot to Pilot hat is the best, but if you already have that one, go check out another one. They are amazing quality, and who knows, maybe we'll have a t-shirt one day. So check that out. Link is going to be below, or you can find the link in our Instagram. It is the main link on there. So check those out, and love seeing them in the wild. So tag me on Instagram when you get them and when you're wearing them. But Aviation, hope you have a great day. And as always, happy flying.